The Attorney General wishes to announce that the following program has been rated
liberal rubbish
by the Department of Justice.
All right, guard, begin the unnecessarily slow-moving dipping mechanism.
What in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here?
Isn't he simply adorable, Bob?
I told you, never trust a monkey!
Listen, you smell something.
Atomic batteries to power.
White Stripes with Seven Nation Army. That's my new intro song. Hi, how you doing? I'm Joe Vecchio. Welcome to the Cup of Joe radio show. This is episode 3 of the radio show. How you all doing tonight? I hope you're having a good night. As it stands, it's just after midnight on Sunday, or you can say very early Monday. The wife is laying down watching TV, a special about New York. And I'm just sitting here, and I was spending most of the day working up on the computer, fixing up the site, and talking to some people online, and just basically just going around the website. So not really doing a lot. It's been kind of a slow, lazy day for me, but that's okay. Everybody needs one of those every now and then, right? One of the things I had on today was the movie Casino. I don't know how many of you out there have seen that movie. It's a very good movie. It's one of a set of 3 movies by Martin Scorsese, which basically deals with thugs, gangsters, mobsters, as you will. And they start out, the first movie was Mean Streets, and it's a group of thugs on the very lower end beating people up, basically, for small amounts of money. I haven't seen that one yet, but it's basically the same thing. The second one was Goodfellas, which, by the way, the original title of Goodfellas was going to be Wise Guys, but they didn't use that because there was a TV series called Wise Guy on at the same time, and they didn't want to get it too confused with that. Wise Guy is one of the best cop shows ever made, and Goodfellas is one of the best mobster movies ever made. Now, keep in mind, these aren't necessarily mafia people. I mean, there were mafia people mentioned in it, but De Niro and Pesci, who are the main character, main actors in it, Robert De Niro, Joe Pesci, are the two main actors that are in these films, and there are a bunch of other people. They all play the same types of characters, and De Niro is like the brains, and Pesci is like the crazy, insane brawn. In the movie Casino, they took this to the next level, which is where instead of dealing with, you know, thousands and maybe hundreds of thousands of dollars, now you're talking, you know, 6, 7, 8 figures of money, because De Niro is the head of the Tangiers Casino in Vegas. And he makes lots of money for the mob people back home. And so they like him there. And it's remarkable. You look at the kind of lifestyle that the characters live, and of course it's all based to a certain extent on real events. But if you look at the characters on there and you look at the luxurious life they live, and say, man, it might be nice to have all this money. And there was actually a letter, a post on the Bart Cop forum by someone who was saying, you know, is God in favor of George Bush and all his people because they have so much money? You know, is he punishing us? Is he really on their side? And if you look at that and you look at what's going on with Mr. Bush and Mr. Cheney and the little sweetheart deals that they're getting, you can see that it works. The things that they do work for them because they're completely ruthless. And there's a price you pay for that. I mean, yes, they have more money than we'll ever see in our lifetimes. I mean, certainly more money than I'll ever see. But how happy can they really be? The struggle for power after a while, it doesn't really matter how much money you have. You always want more because you're afraid that if you stop, if you slow down, somebody's going to do it to you. And in that kind of world, that's exactly what happens. I mean, never mind, you know, you're not talking about, you know, movies and stuff. That happens in real life. The Greeks have a term for it. It's called hubris, which is basically just people just, if you have X amount, you want twice X, and then you want twice that and twice that, and you're never satisfied. And it gets to be an obsession, and eventually it destroys you. Now, a guy like me, I've never been very ambitious, okay? Some people say it's just laziness. Some people say it's lack of focus. Whatever it is, I've never been very good at making money. I've had a lot of different jobs, and I've lost a lot of jobs. I guess, you know, a lot of it is just because of my attitude. And there is really a part of me that despises, you know, working for a living in the sense of working for to make someone else rich while you're not getting as much as you really deserve. And it goes on a lot of little whiny bullshit like that. But there's always a part of me that wishes that he could do something to make money so that he didn't have to get up in the morning and do the 9-to-5 shtick and come back home and just basically repeat. I mean, I have a lot of relatives that are like that. You know, they are just, as some people would call them, mundanes. I mean, it's the same type of cycle, repeated over and over. You know, you grow up, you go to school, you get good grades, you go to college, you get a job, you get married, you pump out a few more units and repeat the process. And anything above and beyond that doesn't exist. You know, sure, you might watch a TV show or you might enjoy sports or whatever, you know, but that's nothing serious. It's nothing important. Everything that you do is geared towards, you know, get a job, do something, you know, be a respectable member of society and move on. And I've never fit into that mold. Whether it's my fault or whether it's the fault of society, I'm not here to argue with that. And I've never been happy but I've never been happy just thinking along those lines. I want something different. And again, it's not really a question of being lazy or being stupid or anything. It's just different. And some people manage to get around that. Now, there are people who have the same kind of attitude that I do, but they inherited vast sums of wealth, or they got money from other family or someplace else, and they're able to survive. And me, I don't have that option. And that's why when my sister wrote me that email a little while ago, she was getting on my case for not getting a job and all that, and I'm like, I understand what you're saying. But she doesn't comprehend where I'm coming from. I mean, to her, she worked hard. She got a college degree. Now she has a very good job for Newsday newspaper. I don't really have an answer there. But I will say to the guy who wrote the letter that the Bush people and all that, don't worry about all their money. I mean, just because they know where their next meal is coming from and they know they won't have to worry about where they're going to live and stuff like that, they have so many other problems. I mean, when you have that kind of money and power, it's almost like you're a slave yourself because you have to defend that constantly. See what I'm saying? It's kind of like having a big pile of gold, and everybody can see it, and you want everybody to see it, and you want everybody to know you have it, but you have to sit there and guard the fence so that other people don't take it. And you really want to live like that. I mean, I look at Goodfellas, and I look at Casino, and despite all the money that they have, is that the price you want to pay for it? Always watching over your shoulder, always worried that somebody's going to be right there, and sooner or later, somebody's going to come up and get it and take it from you. Because somebody sees that and they want it. I mean, that's just human nature. So just remember that when you watch them on TV or read about them in the news. And just think about that the price that they've had to pay in their lives for all that wealth and all that desire for power. Here's Pink Floyd. Money. I don't.
left and the right.
Doesn't matter. I guess it's cruising for cruising.
What you doing up there, bro?
You know, I had to represent a little something, so I put it down for 2 minutes. What's up, Dirty?
Oh, shit, dude. I'm not here in the studio, man. Supposed to be down here 2 hours ago, man. Shit.
Hey, man, I be there, though. What's up?
Hey, dude, I found this tight-ass beat, man. You got to hear this shit, dude.
Well, put it on, then.
Hey, man,
dirty.
Hey, what, you want to do this shit right now, man?
Let's do it,
hey,
then.
Hey, why don't we do this shit right now, man? Off the flip,
you
dude.
I got you, then.
Two a mess, like this.
What's up, Dirty? It's your motherfucking boy, Pretty. I want my motherfucking boy, CD Clay. We bought some shit like this, you heard me? This song goes off to the real pretty boys, from St. Louis to Evansville, to them fake-ass niggas in your hood, and them hoes in Zang Charlie.
Right.
Peep this out. It's all about the money now. Flying first class, straight spinning hundreds now. Strictly motherfucking angels, these and all now. New quick can be the number one stunner now. It's all about the money now. Flying first class, straight spinning hundreds now. Strictly motherfucking SUVs and always now. No question, we the number one stunning now. See the white boy walking up and down New York, but no cares. Got the long hair swinging, middle fingers in the air. People stare and point, I hit the 40 and I laugh. Kiss my ass, the past is known. In 1 year we've grown from the fleet unknown until the hot zone. $1 million homes in some bling. Never thought we'd amount to a damn thing. We the man, shit like Manny Fresh. Too many styles won't settle for less. It's been a long time coming, but you know what's happening. We going platinum. It's all about the money now. Flying first class, drink spinning hundreds now. Strictly motherfucking Angelis and Hummers now. No question, we the number one stunner now. It's all about the money now. Flying first class, straight spinning hundreds now. Strictly motherfucking SUVs and Hummers now. No question, we the number one stunner now. Getting paid, getting laid, spending the money I made. Thinking about my little girl and the changes I made. My focus still smoking, still sipping on yak. Pretty boy on my chest, that's my life, you dig? Always pimping, never stitching, cause I'm so, so clean. Iced out Timbo and Polo jeans. Do you know what I mean? Do you know what I mean? One more time, man. It's all about the money now. Flying first class, straight spinning hundreds now. Strictly motherfucking SUVs and hummers now. No question, we the number one stunning now. It's all about the money now. Flying first class, straight spinning hundreds now. Strictly motherfucking SUVs and hummers now. No question, we the number one stunning now. Yeah, that's right. This song goes out to my real pretty boys out there. My boys in St. Charles. What's up, Liz? What's up, Holly Paul? What's up, Keith? What's up, Travis Jr.? My baby mama, what's up? My little girl, Taylor. What about you, Clay? What you
hey,
got?
Hey, man, City Clay, man. To those fake-ass haters that stole my car, I know you all out there, man. I'm gonna find you motherfuckers, man. But hey, no matter now, because I'm riding Hummers. Got an SUV. No
Bling, 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 bling,
with Money Talks. And before that, the old classic Pink Floyd Money. I think we're doing three or four different decades there. Floyd came out 70s. I believe the AC/DC is an 80s song, but don't quote me on that. And I'm not really sure about the other one, but I'm pretty sure that's 90s, 2000. How you doing? I'm Joe Vecchio. We're talking about money. The fact that I don't have any. I haven't been asking for donations, and I'm not going to ask for donations. And I'm going to be talking about that in a later segment on the show when we're talking about some other bloggers, and that's fine. You know, it's remarkable I managed to put this thing together on the shoestring budget that I have. And by shoestring, I mean nothing. Well, really not nothing, but it's all very inexpensive. I mean, you know, apart from the computer, which really wasn't that bad, I think I paid, concluding the monitor and all that, probably around $700 for it, no big deal. I got a very nice, using rebates, very cheap CD-ROM burner, which helps me burn onto CD stuff that I can't fit on the hard drive, simple computer. I got a very simple little mixer off of eBay for about $30, and the microphone is a Radio Shack microphone. It cost me about $30, and I got a little mic stand that cost another $20. So I really didn't put a ton of money into this. It took me a while to get it set up properly. Joey Davis from the Joey Jojo Show, he had a much better setup than I do. He could actually support two microphones. I was under the assumption that this one could, but I can always work something out. You know, as I was mentioning before, with the type of money that the Bush people had, it just eats at them after a while. They really, what does anybody need with that much money for? It's got to be an obsession for power, because once you get past a certain point, I mean, what do you need any money for? And George Lucas, who was, you know, as you know, the great director of Star Wars and American Graffiti and a lot of other great films, he always says that once you have a nice car and a nice house, having money really just means eat out more. And you get to travel a bit, you get more freedom, you know. I'm personally trying to do some other things on the side to make money. I do some writing. My problem is that I don't know how to market myself. I'm not a good publicity person. I just like to do the show, and I like to do my writing, and I hope someday to get paid for it. I need an agent. Anybody out there want to act as my agent, email me, joevec@bellsouth.net. If anybody wants to act as my agent, we'll work out some sort of deal or something, and all that. But yeah, this got me started, you know, on this because of that message on Bart Cop and because of the movie Casino, which is a great movie. If you haven't seen it, go out and rent it, especially if you have a DVD player and all that. You know, you can do a lot of things very cheaply nowadays. I mean, DVD players are cheap. You can get a good DVD player for less than $100. And when I was at, a couple of weeks ago, I was at the Anime Weekend Atlanta convention. I'm a big anime fan. And they're having a panel of some sort. They were talking about burning DVD-ROMs or something like that, or playing them. And there's apparently a machine called an Apex machine that you can do something to the coding to play DVD-ROMs that you not normally can play in the United States. And I was confused about that because I wasn't aware that there was a change. But apparently some foreign DVDs won't play in there. My wife has always been broke. She has worked hard all of her life. No one, you know, people can accuse me of being lazy, and some of those charges might stick, because I do procrastinate, and I do have a little ADD, the attention deficit disorder, if you can actually call that a disease. But I do something after a while, and I just get bored with it. I get tired with it. That's one of the problems I've had with the jobs. And it's not that I haven't done good at the work that I have done. But, you know, you look at my wife, and she's really worked hard all of her life, and she has nothing to show for it. And it was partly because her former husbands weren't really good supporters, and she's had to be the main breadwinner while also trying to raise three kids practically by herself. And when you have kids and you have kids young, and even she admits that it was a mistake to have done that, that's a huge expense. That's what basically happened to me when I agreed to have her come down here. And I, you know, I knew that she came with the kids, and I accepted that, but unfortunately, I was not able to handle things financially, and that's why I'm in the situation that I'm in. But if, you know, you look at it, you can still live very frugally. I mean, I don't require a whole lot in my life, and I'm very happy to have a nice roof over my head, air conditioning in the summer, because I cannot stand the heat. I hate to think about how I would live if I were homeless, and it actually came pretty close to that, and the money situation makes me very depressed, and it does often hinder my ability to do any work. But I lead a pretty good life, to be perfectly honest for you. And the gentleman who wrote the post, I'm sure they lead a pretty good life too. And quite frankly, I don't really mind the kind of wealth that Mr. Bush and his people have. You know, they're perfectly happy. I'm perfectly happy to let them have it. Whether they've earned it or not, that's really none of my business. Yes, life is unfair sometimes, and you just have to learn to accept that. And as I've always said, is my objection is that they're using that money to gain political power to basically make my life worse. And that is something I won't tolerate. It's not a matter of jealousy, and because there are a lot of rich people on the left that I admire greatly, Ted Turner, for example. And I don't. You know, I don't disparage him for his wealth. I mean, he certainly earned it. I mean, he was a true visionary as far as cable TV is concerned, and he understood, you know, the potential of it before anybody else. He was a showman. He's hardly perfect. I know he's done some things, probably some criminal behavior somewhere along the line somewhere. But you know, you're willing to accept a certain amount of it. I mean, I can't see him as having really hurt anybody deeply, except for maybe breaking up some, you know. Maybe breaking up with a girl or something after seeing all the money that he had made later on. But, you know, there's nothing wrong with having money. And, you know, there's a saying, you know, money is the root of all evil. And that's not exactly a true statement. At least that's not exactly the way this... What I mean is it's not the way the statement... What the real statement is. What the real statement is that love of money is the root of all evil. And as long as we remember that, I think we can keep in mind... how things go. Now, you know, the last job that I worked at, I worked for Siemens. Actually, I was working for Randstad, the TEP industry. And these people did pretty good for themselves. They made good money because they're unionized. And as you know, in this country, unions are in deep trouble. Right now, apparently, there's some strikes going on in California for Albertsons and a couple of other supermarkets that are all owned by the Kroger Corporation. And I happen to like going to Kroger here in Georgia, so I'm kind of reluctant. But, you know, it's not in the same state, so I don't really know what's affected. I do know that because I used to work for Kroger for a short time as a part-time job, that they are unionized. And I'm very strong union. I believe in that. I believe in that in the sense that working people have a right to stick up for themselves. And as I've said before, I'm a working class liberal. The things that I think about in liberalism are more geared towards giving these people, you know, giving working people a fair shake. Having them, you know, basically earn what they deserve to earn. And making that determination more of a balance between what working people think that they deserve and what the bosses think they deserve. I mean, it's not always up to the bosses, and I'm sorry for the people who think that the bosses are like total monarch and total king. It doesn't work that way, really. It's a business arrangement. Just as bosses don't determine what the price are of the products that they have to buy, even though they might be they'll be able to haggle, but they don't sit there and they can't say, okay, I'm paying X amount for this, and if you don't like it, tough. It doesn't work that way, and just the same way, it shouldn't work for labor. You say, I'm paying you X amount. That's all I think you're worth, and that's that. You don't have a say in it. And I just think working people need to stick up for themselves a little more. And I see a lot of that with workers nowadays not doing it, especially here in the South. There's just an attitude of, you know, you take what you're given and you keep your mouth shut, and it always falls into the lowest common denominator, the people who are willing to work 50, 60 hours a week. I'm not. I don't like to work jobs where I'm working that much because, to me, what's the point of getting a few extra dollars if you're not home to enjoy it? So there's a balance there. And my relatives give me crap because I don't, you know, fit into their pattern, and I don't do the things the same thing they do. Maybe it's because I'm less willing to make myself subservient to it. Or maybe I'm just lazy. I don't think I'm really lazy because I'm capable of working hard. Or maybe it's just, you know, I just don't fit in and I don't feel comfortable. I don't know. There's a lot of different reasons for it. But the truth of the matter is, I'm poor. And I don't know if I'm always going to be poor or not. I'm certainly hoping that I've got some projects going on that will help me get a few more bucks later on. But I'm really not expecting it very much. I pretty much assume that I'm going to spend my life poor. If things change, that'll be great. I mean, even assuming I would get a lot of money, the hard part for me would be to keep myself from spending it too quickly. A lot of people who are poor who get a lot of money wind up losing it very quickly because they're not used to having it, and they wind up spending it because they don't have any discipline or control. And unfortunately, I can be like that. And I'm going to have to watch myself. Maybe I'll hire somebody, an accountant or something, to help me out. If I can find my old friend Greg, he's an accountant, and I trust him implicitly. I let my wife handle it, but she can be just as bad as I am about stuff like that. We certainly want to help out some of the charities that have helped us out over the few years. But if I got a lot of money, I'd get a fairly nice place, say either an apartment or I'd get a house with a nice basement that I can turn into a nice studio where I can do these shows and do stuff, because I still want to do stuff. I'm not the type of person who's going to sit in my butt all night and watch TV. I want to do something productive. I mean, even the stuff when I'm doing on the internet, I'm reading news, or I'm commenting about it, I'm writing, I'm doing something. And I would want to continue to do stuff, start a business, you know? I want to be busy, I want to be active. I guess I'm just unwilling to do it on other people's terms as much as other people are. So, my wife is watching TV right now. We have, the cable comes as part of the house. It's part of the bills. It's not like it's a separate thing for us. So we really don't pay that much for it. For those of you saying, how come if you're poor you get cable and all that stuff? Well, you know, if it wasn't part of the house, we wouldn't have it. And, you know, but as long as it's here, we're going to watch it. And, you know, we have, what is it, Comcast. And, we find ourselves just watching the same kind of old stuff over and over again. And then really, it boils down to just, even though we have, about 80 channels or so, we really only watch a few of them. And I'm sure we can all sympathize with Mr. Bruce Springsteen here.
I bought a bourgeois house in the Hollywood Hills with a trunk load of $100,000 bills.
Man came by to hook up my cable TV. We settled in for the night, my baby and me. We switched round and round till half past dawn. There was 57 channels and nothing on. 57 channels and nothing on. 57 channels and nothing on. Well now, home entertainment was my baby's wish, so I hopped to town for a satellite dish. I tied it to the top of my Japanese car. I came home when I pointed out into the stars. A message came back from the great beyond. It's 57 channels and nothing on. 57 channels and nothing on. 57 channels and nothing on. Well, we might have made some friends with some billionaires. We might have got all nice and friendly if we made it upstairs. All I got was a note that said bye-bye, John. Our love's 57 channels and nothing on. So I bought a 44 Magnum that was solid steel cast. And in the blessed name of Elvis, well, I just let it blast. Till my TV lay in pieces there at my feet. And it busted me for disturbing the almighty peace. Judge said what you got in your defense, son. 57 channels and nothing on. 57 channels and nothing on. 57 channels and nothing on. By your eyes, friend, you're just about gone. 57 channels and nothing on. 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 57 channels.
Refreshments, theme from TV show King of the Hill. How's everybody doing? This is Joe Vecchio, host of the Cup of Joe radio show here. Hope you're having a good night. I started talking about television. Before the King of the Hill theme, of course, was Bruce Springsteen, 57 channels and nothing on it. It often feels that way. Like I was saying before we started, a little musical interlude there. We have probably around 80 channels on the TV, I guess. So really probably around 75, 76. And we probably only watch about 30 or 40 of those, or at least we have, let's put it that way, we have 30 or 40 of those on the scrollers, and there's maybe a half a dozen channels that we actually watch regularly. Mostly, for myself, I find that I'm watching mainly reruns and sports. those are the big things for me. And I probably watch too much TV when I'm bored, but I really don't watch as much as I used to, and I don't watch as much as some other people watch, but I'm a big fan of television, and mostly I'm a big fan of television themes. And every now and then I'll find a new show that I enjoy that I like, and I like it sometimes just because of the theme. And there are some shows that I can't stand the show, but I like the theme. So go figure. You know, and I happen to like King of the Hill, by the way. I happen to love that theme. That is a really awesome theme. Of course, the Refreshments are an outstanding group. I've played a couple of their songs on the Joey JoJo show. I stuck them in there as fillers, but there you got to hear the whole thing, and it's a really, really well-done song. What are some of the shows that I like? I like reruns of The Nanny. I've been watching that a lot. I like Fran Drescher a lot. I happen to have a lot of admiration for Fran Drescher because this is a person who really, really came up and worked hard and made something of herself. And as my wife is so fond of pointing out, she never forgot the people she came, you know, the people she was with when she was still working hard. The lady who plays Val, her best friend in the TV show, was actually an old childhood friend of hers. She's put her parents in. The little dog, Chester, that's in there, for those of you who don't know that much about the show, that is actually Fran Drescher's dog, Chester, that they put in, and they made the dog to be owned by Cece, who was the other character in there. I like that show a lot because I like that character, and I love her voice. It's so nasal. Hey, Marty, Mr. Sheffield, I put my foot in the toilet and it stuck. Okay, that's horrible. I'm sorry. But I love that voice, and she was told to change that voice. I like Barney Miller, which was rerun on TV Land. They don't really like it that much. I guess it doesn't get that good ratings, but I love that show. I mean, that's a wonderful show. They're showing, on the weekends, they're showing Welcome Back, Cotter, and WKRP, two of my favorite shows. Although Cotter, I can give or take one way or the other. I happen to have the hots for Marcia Stratzman, who was Mrs. Cotter in the TV series. And I also like Jan Smithers, who played Bailey Quarters on WKRP. The other girl, everybody remembers Lonnie Anderson. And I never found, you know, and I know everybody thinks I'm nuts, but I never really found Lonnie Anderson that attractive, to be perfectly honest. You know. But I like the TV theme to WKRP, and I like the TV theme to Welcome Back, Cotter. In fact, I saw John Sebastian perform it live on Saturday Night Live once, and that was interesting. But I don't watch a lot of new shows. I really don't care for a lot of the new shows. I guess the most recent show that I really enjoyed was Seinfeld. Because it was such a well-written show and well-put together. Even though the characters kind of are pretty damn despicable sometimes, but the situations that they find themselves in are just so funny. And it was such a well-put-together show. And Jerry Seinfeld is another one, like Fran Drescher. I mean, you have no idea how hard he worked on that show for the many years it was on. It was like 9 or 10 years, I think, that show was on. And you're talking about people who are working 18 to 20-hour days. And that's a lot of work to put together a show like that, and to have that kind of a quality for it. Anyway, let me take a little interlude here. I'm going to play for you some of my favorite TV themes, and we're going to come back and talk a little bit more about television. This is Joe Vecchio, and this is the Cup of Joe Radio Show.
Pakistan, New York to Omaha, Luxembourg, Galveston, Freeport to Minsk.
Where in the world's the Colosseum? Who took the Sphinx and Cleopatra's Needle? Who got the Guggenheim Museum? I don't see 'em. And where's the German soccer team? She took the Bang out of Krakatoa. She stole the keys from Beethoven's piano. Took a little Italy and then Samoa. I got to show her. Flag, the Indy hasn't stopped yet. Nobody tops her con artistry. She's a mystery. She never even calls her sister. She took the lean from the Tower of Pisa. Got off the plane. Her eardrums hadn't popped yet. Sailed to Paris on a bogus visa. Then just to tease her, she copped a smile from Mona Lisa.
Where in the world is Carmen Sandiego?
Was Greg Lee with Carmen's song, the unofficial theme to Where in the World from Carmen Sandiego. In fact, if you do a search on Kazaa or on the web for Carmen Sandiego, you're going and look for the music, you're going to find an a cappella version of that, which really sucks. Before that, we had the theme, the SWAT. For those of you who remember that show back in the 70s, the show and the song were both big hits back in the 70s. SWAT was about a tactical assault police team, and before that we had the theme from Miami Vice, which is a really, really good theme that I enjoy very much. Hi, how you doing? We're talking about television. I'm Joe Vecchio. It's a Cup of Joe radio show, episode number 3, and we're having a good time talking about television, and I'm going to be playing a few more theme songs later on, and then we're going to talk about some other things before we head off to pasture for the week. I'm trying to do more than one show a week when I can. When we were doing Joey Jojo, it was basically limited to whatever time Joey had, and he really didn't want to do more than one show a week, and he was, you know, busy with other stuff, I guess, and didn't really want to put any time into it. I wish I could put more time into it myself. I'd like to do a show every day if I possibly could. If I'm going to do that, I need to get a new monitor, because I simply cannot sit here and look at a blank screen. You know, having the monitor, being able to turn the monitor on, allows me to see some stuff and read some stuff back. I have to do everything off the top of my head here, or just write stuff down manually. I can't pull out a big news report because I don't have a printer. My printer's not working, so I can't pull out a big news report, print it up, and read stuff from that and all that good business. But we're talking about TV, and we're talking about some of the reruns and the shows that I like. You know, TV Land's gotten really bad. I think in the last year or so. I mean, some of the shows they've had on, you know, Gilligan's Island, Brady Bunch, you know. I don't like these shows. I don't care for these shows. I mean, you look at the type of shows that they had in the 60s, and for the most part, they were just crap. With a few rare exceptions, they're just crap. I mean, Genie and Bewitched, okay, yeah, sure, Barbara Eden looked wonderful in that little harem outfit, and I still watch just to see that, because, oh my God, she was hot in that. I've always had the kind of the hots for Elizabeth Montgomery, so I've always been kind of a girl next door type, you know. There were much better shows in the 70s. That was the era of, like, the Mary Tyler Moore and stuff like that. And there were a few good shows in the 80s, like Hill Street Blues, which was an outstanding show. Best cop show ever, I think. Along with Wise Guy, if you've ever seen Wise Guy. Wise Guy is a great show. I mentioned that earlier with Ken Wall. Just a fantastic police show. And really, a lot of shows lately I just don't care for. Lifetime, which is a channel that I watch a lot. And, you know, I guess I'm not a big man because I like Lifetime TV. You know, I don't smoke. I don't drink. I don't treat women like, objects of sex, or at least only objects of sex. So I guess I'm not a real man as far as some people are concerned. But they've got a thing going on Lifetime now where they've got Golden Girls Nanny, and they've shown that. Or they'll show two Golden Girls episodes. You know, it's kind of interesting because, you know, like I mentioned earlier, they're showing Casino, and they showed Casino again the other night. Shawshank Redemption was on TBS, and it's like, how many times are they going to play this movie? You know, I lived in Italy for a year or so working for the Navy as a civilian contractor, and I used to laugh at Italian television because they would do that. They would show the same movie over and over. They would show a movie back to back. And, you know, where I was used to in America, we had the movie of the week. They'd show, you know, this big movie, and every Wednesday or whatever, they'd have a big movie. This one, they'd have a movie of the week, but they'd show the same movie every day at the same time. And I'm like, isn't this ridiculous? And we're seeing a lot of that now in American TV. And you've got TNT does it a lot, but other stations are doing it too. But TNT is probably the worst transgressor along those lines. And it's really kind of annoying. You know, you would figure that they'd have a little bit more programming. But you know, there's so many channels now doing so many different things. There's a channel I wish I did have, of all the channels that I have on a TV. The one I wish I did have would be a game show channel, because they show a lot of the old game shows. Not as many as I would like, but they were showing the old Match game shows, which I love to watch because it was just a goofy-ass show. I mean, everybody acted a little nuts. And I remember reading about it, and they were doing some stories about some of these shows. And, you know, what people don't know, sometimes when they do these shows, they don't do one show a day. They'll do five or six shows. They'll do, like, a week's worth of show in a day, as much as they can possibly do it, because it's cheaper that way to do many shows all at the same time. And on Match Game in particular, they always had a little bar for the celebrities. And the celebrities would take a few drinks and take a few, and by the fifth or sixth show, they were plastered. And you can see it in how they acted. Charles Nelson Reilly, in particular, was fond of getting us. And Gene Rayburn, you know, there are a couple of really great moments from that. One of the famous TV bloopers that they have. And I love shows like that. I'll get to that in a second. But, you know, he was introducing a new lady, a new contestant on the show. And he wanted to say that she has nice dimples. And she said, oh, doesn't she have nice nipples? And, you know, of course, everybody loses it. I love those compilation type shows too, except that I'm getting kind of annoyed at VH1, and this is along the same lines, because they pulled up these shows called I Love the 70s, and now they're doing I Love the 80s, and, you know, I watched them, and they're just showing them over and over, and back and forth, back and back, back to back, and it's like, okay already, I've seen I Love 1975 16 times, or at least I've seen it aired that many times, and I'm like, you know, play something else. Please, God Almighty, say something else. And does anybody remember when MTV played music videos? Does anybody remember that? You know, I hated, when MTV first came out, I hated those commercials that I want my MTV stuff. And I hated that. I absolutely hated it because it's so snotty and typical teenage stuff. You know, I want my MTV. You know, I want my MTV. You know, so, you know, first of all, it's your parents who are paying for the cable, you know. Don't get me started on that. I like a lot of some of the other shows I like from the 70s. I mentioned I like WKRP in Cincinnati, and I remember when that show kind of ended on a really kind of bad note. They weren't expecting to be canceled, and they really should have gone on. And I believe that the idea behind that show was to take that station from being in the dumps to it being the number one radio station. So, you know, from the radio station being in the dumps, you know, one of the worst stations in Cincinnati, to it being the number one radio station, and to see how that progression works. I don't really know that much about the radio industry, but I've heard that it's a fairly accurate description of what radio was like. And some people aren't aware that WKRP in Cincinnati is actually based on a station here in Atlanta, WQXI, I think it is. Now they're a sports talk station, but this is before the date when the days of FM radio was just starting out in the 60s or so. And from what I understand, there really was like a turkey event. One of the famous episodes of WKRP in Cincinnati, for those of you who don't know what the hell I'm talking about, some of the guys who were there before Andy came in, Andy was the new program director, and he changed them over from the sappy music to rock and roll. And so the older guys are saying, well, we can still do stuff, you know, we'll do some promotions, we'll show that we're useful, you know. So, and it was led by the man who was the general manager of the station. His mother owned the place, but he was the general manager, and he was like, well, we'll do a promotion, and he kept it a big secret, and he had the news guy out there, and it was a Thanksgiving thing. So the announcer's announcing, you know, there's helicopters flying over, and, you know, still nothing going on, and, oh, if something's falling out of the helicopter, maybe it's a parachuter, you know, no parachute. And then they were dumping turkeys. And it says, oh, my God, they're turkeys. And, of course, one of the great all-time lines after the whole thing was over, and Mr. Carlson, and, you know, who's the head guy, comes in, he's, as God is my witness, I thought turkeys could fly. You know, it was one of the great lines on television. And it was just such a wonderful, wonderful show. So well written. And at the end of it, what had happened was there was one show episode where they had a bomb threat at the station. And they were worried about that, so they sent Johnny Fever and Venus Flytrap, two of the DJs, out to the transmitter to do the show from there, just in case. And Johnny was upset because he was trying to get... He had a horse that he wanted to bet on, and he was trying to get a hold of it from the phone, hold of his bookie from the phone and the transmitter, and he couldn't do it. And he was pissed off, and he pulled the phone out of the socket. He couldn't get the bet in time, and his horse won. He would have won several thousand dollars. And he was worried after that because he was paranoid about the phone cops. And he's like, Venus, like, phone cops? What are phone cops? Man, I'm telling you, those guys are hardball, man. But what happened was that they found out that the bomb wasn't in the station. The bomb was at the transmitter. So they sent all these cops down there. They couldn't get a hold of Johnny on the phone, of course, because he had pulled the cord out. So they sent all these cops down there. And Johnny, in his manic state, thinks, oh, my God, it's the phone cops. And he goes running out. That's what saved his life. His paranoia saved his life. So they didn't have a transmitter anymore, no way to broadcast the signal. And so Andy made a deal with Carlson's mother, who basically thought Andy was hot, and they decided, you know, she agreed to pay for a new transmitter if Andy would, you know, be her guy, would sleep with her. And I wish I would have seen how that whole thing would have turned out, because that was an interesting subplot right there. Anyway, it's a really good show, and I like it a lot, and here's a theme to it.
If you've ever wondered whatever became of me, I'm living on the air in Cincinnati, Cincinnati WKRP. Got kind of tired of packing and unpacking, town to town, up and down the dial. Maybe you and me were never meant to be, just maybe think of me once in a while. Heading up that highway, leaving you behind, hardest thing I ever had to do. Broke my heart in two, but baby, pay no mind. The price for finding me was losing you. Help me hide my lonesome feeling, far away from you and feeling low. It's getting late, my friend, my love, I miss you so. Take good care of you, I've gotta go.
if you've ever wondered, whatever became of me. I'm living on the air in Cincinnati, Cincinnati WKRP. Got kinda tired of packing and unpacking, town to town, up and down the dial. Maybe you and me were never meant to be, just maybe think of me once in a while. I'm a WKRP in Cincinnati.
Welcome back. Your dreams were your ticket out. Welcome back to that same old place that you laughed about. Well, the names have all changed since you hung around, but those dreams have remained and they've turned around. Who'd have thought they'd lead ya?
Who'd have thought they'd lead ya?
Back here where we need ya.
Back here where we need ya.
Yeah, we tease him a lot, 'cause we got him on the spot. Welcome back.
Welcome back. Welcome back. Welcome back.
There's something that made you come back again. And what could ever lead you?
What could ever lead you?
Back here where we need you.
Back here where we need you.
Yeah, we tease him a lot, 'cause we got him on the spot. Welcome back.
Welcome back. Welcome back. Welcome back. Welcome back.
Something that made me come back again. And what could ever lead you?
What could ever lead you?
Back here where we need you.
Back here where we need you.
Yeah, we tease him a lot, 'cause we got him on the spot. Welcome back.
Welcome back. Welcome back. Welcome back. Welcome back. Welcome back.
Yeah, we tease him a lot.
Welcome back. Welcome back.
'Cause we got him.
theme from Iron Chef, if you've ever seen that show rocks. For those of you who don't know what the heck I'm talking about, it's a cooking show that you see on the Food Network. It's a Japanese show that they imported here. And to be honest, changing the subject slightly, I had to really fight myself to not play any of my favorite Japanese animation theme songs, but we'll save that for another time, perhaps. But Iron Chef is a cooking show, and it's done in the usual Japanese fashion where they have everything so dramatic. And basically, they have three or four chefs that are like their champions. They are the Iron Chefs. And they bring in a challenger every week to compete with the Iron Chef, and they're given 1 hour to prepare a meal using a key ingredient. Each of the different dishes that they make has to include the key ingredients in them. And the key ingredient is not unveiled until the show begins. So they're given an hour, and there's a big competition, but the way they handle it is so dramatic. And you can tell by the music. I mean, that is very serious music. That is a very serious, powerful composition. I love that with the drum beats in the background. And again, I'm gonna do a show on Japanese animation and their TV themes in the future, with a guest, hopefully, to talk about that. But mostly I just wanted to get the point across that I love TV themes. And all that. You know, I realize that the show is maybe a little bit amateurish, and that's okay. You know, it's my show, and I get to be a little amateurish if I like to be. And I do enjoy doing it. I'm not the only one who's doing this show. And I made a mistake. I think it was the last week's show that I mentioned. I'm the only one where it's free, and that's not necessarily true. Take Back the Media's show is also free. There's another guy who does a show, Bart Cop, who I'm a big fan of. I'm a big fan of his site, and I've actually talked to him on the phone a couple of times. But he charges for it, and I happen to disagree with that, but hey, that's Bart Cop's deal. If he wants to do it, he can do it. It's not for me to pass judgment on that. It's just not something I would do. It's not something I care to do. Anybody who wishes to donate money to help me put the show together, I'm not going to argue with, but I'm not asking for any. It's not really necessary. I'm doing this because I enjoy it. And there is a monetary thing to it later on. I mean, I'm hopeful to eventually get picked up by somebody. I'm doing this show solo rather than doing it like I had with Joey Davis, simply because I want to do something, and I want to have a show, and I want to do something besides just sitting around. Working with Joey was great. We were a great team together, and I'm not going to go into the reasons why we broke up, but I really do want to have a partner. By the way, before I go on, I want to say if anybody has any comments, I'm going to on the blog, I'm going to open up a link to talk about show 3. In fact, I'm going to do that for all the shows, where you can comment about it on the blog. It's kupojoe.blogspot.com, but of course you know that if you're listening, because that's pretty much the only place you can access the show is through the blog. You'll notice every time I post something, there's a little place for comments there, like in most blogs. Most of the better ones, anyway, although I don't think mine is one of the better ones. It's just one of the newer ones. You can post your comments on there, see seen publicly, and I'll comment if I see something interesting, and I'll write back and all that stuff. And as soon as I get the show uploaded, I'm going to have a place for an open thread so people can talk about it. But I like doing the show. I like doing the blog. I know there's a lot of people doing it, which is why I made my blog just a little bit different from everybody else's. In Atreos, Daily Chaos, who are two sites that I read regularly as well, they do a much better job than I do of putting together a site, checking the news, doing this and doing that. I mean, they do an excellent job of it, and I certainly can't argue with you know, the work that they do. They get a lot more listeners, they get a lot more donations, so they can do a much better thing than I do. I like doing this. I like doing the show. Who are some of the other ones that I read? I read Democratic Underground a lot, and I enjoy some of their articles, but I don't get into their discussion forum because it's just too much. Oh, my God, there's so many people get on that board and comment and talk. I mean, even if you're just scanning through the message forum and you go in there, you know, 2 minutes, you know, you read a few messages, you go back, and there's like all kinds of new stuff up there already, and you just can't keep up. And I don't have the time to donate, I'm sorry, to it. I'll still write my occasional articles, and I do submit them from time to time, but I've really kind of given up on doing the big article thing like others. I'd actually had them, some of them printed far and wide. The whole blogosphere is changing the world, I think, or at least changing the way America works. It certainly changed things for the Howard Dean campaign, which I am a part of, although kind of on the fringes of it. I really haven't done as much as I would have liked to have done at this point, but I'll get involved. I do what little I can. I got involved with it not so much because I think Howard Dean is God's gift to the presidency. I happen to like him a lot. I happen to like his fighting spirit, and I happen to like a lot of the things he stands for and his pragmatism as a governor of Vermont. But I'm more being a volunteer for him because I want to learn how the process works, and I want to see a little bit more of, you know, how things are put together in a political campaign. And just to do a little bit something, I believe, and I haven't always believed this, but I believe now that if you want a little more than, you know, just a little bit from the government as far as, you know, what they can do for you or what they can do for us, then you have to get a little bit more active than just voting. And unfortunately, a lot of people are badly misinformed when it comes to voting anyway. I mean, the whole Schwarzenegger thing, which still upsets me, is a perfect example. I mean, people are voting for the celebrity. I saw a thing on CBS the night before the election where they're talking about people who would vote for Arnold because he would be in favor of legalizing ferrets as a pet. And I wasn't even aware that it was illegal to have a ferret as a pet in California, but he wants to legalize that. And people are using that as the sole issue to vote for this guy. And it's just beyond me. I have a little saying that I do. When people talk about it, they get down on politicians and they say, oh, this guy's boring and this guy's mean, stuff like that. And they have no clue how the political game has to be played and how things have to be done when you're trying to get bills passed or get laws passed, you know, what kind of vision you have and how to implement that. I mean, that's a very difficult task. And you know, it's one thing to have a celebrity mayor like Clint Eastwood was mayor of Carmel by the Sea, and that's fine. I mean, how big is Carmel by the Sea? And what do you do as a city, as a city mayor? You know, you sit there and you try to determine where stop signs and stuff go. And, you know, that's fine. And it's, you know, it's a good start for someone who's really starting in politics to take it from the smaller level and then work your way up. But Mr. Schwarzenegger, and somebody pointed out, he doesn't have any experience in any way, shape, or form. I mean, even as a film person, he's never directed a film. He's never been involved as a producer or involved in any of the inner workings of it. He's just been an actor. He goes to the set, you know, and I happen to like his movies. And I knew he was a Republican, but I didn't really care. You know, I happen to like his movies. He's a very good entertainer. He's very good at what he does. But that, to me, that doesn't translate into governor of California. I might vote for him for a local school board, you know, but that's a huge economy. That's a huge state. But people voted for him because, you know, he's Arnold, you know, and it really sickens me. But, you know, in the blogosphere, it was alive with a lot of news stories about, you know, Arnold and stuff like that, and that's all well and good. Somebody I read somewhere in a message forum saying maybe it was our fault that he got elected because we were the ones pushing to get these molestation charges or, you know, scandals publicized. And maybe if it's true that they started to listen to us and they printed that stuff, it certainly backfired. But getting back to Governor Dean, the reason why his campaign is such a success is because he understands the Internet. And they've had problems in the Wesley Clark campaign because when he officially announced the professional campaigners took over, and one of the things that they did was they got rid of all of the independent webloggers that were out there. And that hacked a lot of people off, and it caused some serious damage to the Clark campaign. And we'll just have to see. I mean, Clark's going to be able to raise a lot of money. He's got a lot of backing from Clinton Gore people, and that's fine. I've got no problem with that. These are people who are experienced. See, certainly the Clinton people knew how to win. The Gore people, I'm not so sure about. But General Clark is actually the most presidential of all the candidates. I mean, it's not a question of whether anyone can beat Mr. Bush, and the fact of the matter is, I honestly think he's going to get reelected anyway. Just because I think people are idiots. They're going to have to prove to me that they're not at this point. I mean, I'm going on that assumption. But the Dean campaign has managed to raise millions and millions of dollars through the Internet. And he hasn't been doing it with big donors. General Clark, if he wants to carry that kind of money, he's going to have to do it through big donors. And that's always going to raise the same kind of specters for the Democratic Party as is a lot of other people. A lot of us Democrats are angry because we see the party being beholden to the same kinds of special interests, if not the same exact ones, and certainly not as nasty ones, as the Republican Party. I mean, you know, the whole system is corrupt. The whole system is corrupt, and it needs to be changed. And what happened with Arnold is a perfect example. There's a guy who, you know, a lot of people find it, big money backed him, and nobody else stood a real chance. And it's getting that way. I mean, Bush is the same way. He's a figurehead. Of course, the Republican Party has always had figurehead presidents. There's only been, you know, three or four presidents in their history that haven't been figurehead, and that's like Lincoln, Ike, and Teddy Roosevelt. Reagan was a figurehead. I mean, he's a nice old man they threw up there, and George Bush is a figurehead. And it's a damn shame that the Democratic Party hasn't operated like that. Even when they had a candidate like John Kennedy, who was telegenic and who was certainly, you know, who knew how to use the medium of television, just like FDR knew how to use radio, you had no belief at all that he was just somebody who was standing up there. I mean, both of these men were intelligent. They knew how to make policy, and they knew how to implement policy, and they knew how to get things done. They were in command of the party. They were in the leaders in that sense. In the Republicans, it's always a small core of moneymakers who are the real power behind the party. And the people they throw up in politics are just basically their tools. And you're seeing that now, you know, the merging of corporate and political interests. And that's, you know, the real definition of what fascism is. But the blogosphere makes things different, as you're calling it. And it's given people a voice who would never have had a voice before. It's given me a voice. The internet has given me a voice. I mean, if this was the type of campaign we were running in the 30s or 40s, there would be no way I would be able to record something and get it out to people. There's no way at all. Now the only thing I'm lacking is publicity person. And again, anybody who wants to volunteer as a publicity person and do that kind of work to get the site recognized and get the show recognized, hey, just email me, joevec@bellsouth.net. I'll be happy to let you do whatever, you know, to get the show publicized. Because I really don't know anything about how to do that, and I really don't care to do that. And that's why I'm really not concerned with putting a counter on the site, because I really don't care how many people listen. But I've been given an opportunity, at the very least, to put my feelings in an area where people, if they want to, can sit down and either read it or listen to it on the radio show. And that's something we haven't had here in this country for a while. And technology is going to change the world. It's changing the way political campaigns are run, and the Dean campaign has taken advantage of it more than anybody else, more than any Republican, more than any of the Democratic candidates. He has done a very good job of it, and he's building a very powerful organization. And I can't say this strongly enough. It's important to keep that organization going, regardless of what happens with Governor Dean in the campaign, whether he wins or loses the primary. That has to be translated into victory in the sense of defeating Mr. Bush. And quite frankly, what you have to understand about the type of people that you're dealing with is that they're going to do everything in their power to prevent that from happening. And we're going to have to win by such overwhelming numbers that we're going to, because we're going to have to overcome all of the obstacles that they're going to throw at us. And I hate to say it, but the failure in Iraq and the deaths of our soldiers in Iraq may actually mean good things for us in that sense. And I hate to say that, because I don't want our soldiers dying. They should never have been put out there in the first place. I'm a veteran. I support the troops. I come from a whole family of veterans. And I think the whole thing that's going on is despicable. But you know what? It's really not that much different from what was going on in Vietnam, from what people tell me. I mean, it was the same type of deal. We were lied to by an administration, and in this case, it was a Democratic administration. You know, what's interesting, though, I think one of the big differences there is that they're releasing the tapes of Lyndon Johnson and, you know, him with the Secretary of State, I guess, and some of his other higher people talking about the war, and they're just sitting saying, man, it's a damn mess. I wish we knew how to get out of it. And this was what he said privately. In public, of course, he was always, you know, support the war effort, where everything's going right, we're, you know, doing good. And people like Senator McGovern, you know, and Eugene McCarthy, not Joe McCarthy, you know, they said if we had known that he felt that way, we could have tried to put together some sort of consensus and try to get something done to bring the troops back. But as far as the and the issue really split apart the Democratic Party, and it really hurt them politically in the long run. That and the Civil Rights Movement, but I won't talk about that now. Because there were a lot of Democrats who were violently opposed to the war, just like there are a lot of Democrats now who are violently opposed to the war. And I'll tell you something, Joe Lieberman, you're wrong. You were wrong for supporting the president. You were wrong in voting to give the president unlimited power to do what he felt like. You're just plain wrong. You know, take your smarmy little face and go back to Connecticut and drop out of the damn race, Joe. You've got no business being there. You are not a presidential candidate. Do you understand me? You are not a presidential candidate. And all you're doing is screwing things up for everybody else. And the Democratic Party needs to understand that it needs to lose people like this and get on with this. I don't care what his credentials are as far as, you know, policies and left wing. You know, this is a man who has sold his soul to the devil. I guess he felt that it would make him look good by supporting George Bush. And I'm telling you something right now. If people wanted to support George Bush, they'd vote for George Bush. Period. Okay? It's not a personal thing. You know, I wish you all the wealth and prosperity and all that stuff in the world, but get the hell out of the race. And as far as I'm concerned, get the hell out of our party. You know, should you win the nomination, I will support you, but either you or Gephardt, I will really hold my nose in voting for you. Because Gephardt's leadership has been just as bad, if not worse. And that's why you have people like Dean come in. Senator Kerry, I don't have a problem with. Granted, he hasn't run the greatest campaign in the world, but, you know, he understands what's going on a lot more, and I do not begrudge him the way he voted, but I think he was misled as much as everybody else. But I really think a lot of these people should just know better. They should know better. And I think a lot of the real insurgence is coming through the weblogs. It's not so much people like me, because, like I said, hardly anybody reads my site. If I get 30 or 40 hits a day, I'd be considered myself very lucky. I'm probably getting around maybe a dozen or so a day. Someone asked me about, you know, how much time I put into it, by the way. And really, it only takes me a few minutes. I mean, I see an item and I'll type it down. When I was doing Pax Liberalis, I was spending a lot of time researching news and doing stuff, and it was really, you know, spending 5 or 6 hours a day on it. And you know something? That's too much. That's too much time. But here with a cup of Joe, I can sit there and do it, you know, maybe 15, 20 minutes a day, just look over something, unless I'm writing a particularly long article. I don't need a lot of time. And I've taken off all the stuff that I used to have on Pax Lib, all the links and all the scripts and all the news items, and it's all gone. All of it's gone. I don't need it. I don't want it. I don't need it on my site. And it's going to stay that way, because I want to keep it as simple as possible. This is just about how I feel and what's up. But anyway, it's been a really good show. I'm going to end it here because I'm getting a little tired, and I think I got a pretty good show. I hope you enjoyed all the TV themes, and I hope you indulge me in that from time to time. But then, again, as I said, this is really not a totally political show, although I am going to talk about politics more than anything else. I did want to talk about, you know, television and stuff like that. I wish I had somebody here to talk to about it, and maybe they could have brought some of their TV themes. And, of course, I could have filled an entire 2 or 3 hour show with the TV themes that I do have. I have a lot of them. And I just picked out some of the ones that are my particular favorites. I particularly like the Iron Chef one and the King of the Hill theme that I started out with. But I hope you have a good week or a few days until my next show, until show 4. And until then, this is Joe Vecchio, Cup of Joe Radio Show, saying bye-bye. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.